This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. It's estimated that over 5 million people in the U.S. currently suffer from Alzheimer's disease. There's a lot of uncertainty that comes with the disease. There's no cure, and it's difficult to predict who will get it. Now, in a new preliminary study, researchers say they have developed the first steps to creating a simple blood test to predict your risk for the disease. The study was published this week in Nature Medicine. Howard Federoff is the lead author on the study. He's also professor of neurology and executive vice president of health sciences at Georgetown University in Washington. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
Can you walk us a bit through what you did here? You took blood samples from people with Alzheimer's, but also those who didn't have symptoms of Alzheimer's.
That's correct. We were interested in identifying individuals who were cognitively normal. And in our study, these were individuals who had an age of 70 or older. We then looked at those individuals to assess their cognitive status. We drew their blood and we followed them. Over time, a subset of those individuals developed cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's. At that point, we went back and looked at their blood to ask the question, is there something in the blood at the time of entry when they were cognitively normal that could have predicted their subsequent emergence of this cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's disease? And what we described in our study is that 10 lipids circulating in their plasma, these are 10 fats, were predictive of that event.
Do we know what role these lipids might play in Alzheimer's?
We really don't know yet. I think the connection between these lipids, which parenthetically all were lower in terms of their concentration in individuals who would go on to become cognitively impaired, are lipids that are found throughout the body. They're found in the membranes of our cells, and one class of these lipids are involved at bringing high-energy molecules to the cell's energy factory, the mitochondria, to burn for energy. So I think one of the really principal and interesting issues is where does this fit into our understanding of what causes the disease and its progression?
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting also is that you found that that there was a tremendous predictive value. 90%? You could predict with 90% certainty.
We did. So we did the study in two phases. We wanted to first ascertain whether we could find a circulating set of molecules, in this case the lipids, and then we validated them independently on another group of individuals in a blinded fashion, and we asked the question, how accurate would this 10-lipid panel be in predicting that phenoconverting event? And it was accurate at the 90% level.
And how long did it take for these people who you predicted to develop Alzheimer's?
Yeah, in our study, the average between entry being cognitively normal and then developing either cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's was just a little over 2 years.
2 years. Do you think you could study people a little earlier in life and find those predicted?
That is a great question, and we are just getting geared up to do that. We'd like to know, first, if this test is positive in 70-year-olds who would go on to what we call phenoconvert, develop cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's, will it also be positive in individuals who are younger, who might have a more delayed emergence of cognitive impairment? And so we are searching, and I think we have found a method to do that in a what I hope will be a more expeditious fashion than having to enroll much younger people and follow them for decades.
Mm-hmm. Now, usually Alzheimer's is diagnosed by looking at levels of tau and beta amyloid proteins. Did you see any correlation with these?
We did not look at either CSF, A-beta, or tau, total tau, or so-called phospho-tau. And neither did we do any neuroimaging, brain scanning, to look at amyloid burden. This is something, this collaboration that you refer to, is something that we feel is imperative for us to do. And so we have a fair amount of work to do, not only linking the lipids to what might be going on in the at-risk individual, but then trying to put this into the temporal progression that usually is cataloged by showing that there are lower levels of A-beta 1 to 42 in the CSF, and then later one has elevations of phospho-tau in the cerebral spinal fluid before the patients are moving into a markedly symptomatic period.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you say to people who say, well, what good is having a test if there's no cure for it? Why do I want to know that I'm going to progress with a 90% surety into getting
Alzheimer's?
Yeah, I think
that's a very important question. And the way we see this right now, in the one instance, if this ever becomes a test that your and my doctor can order for us, I think the family and the patient are going to have to decide, do they want to know? And if so, how will they manage a positive test result? So I think it's likely to be a type of activity that will involve some counseling. And then if there is a positive test, some who have elected to do it might choose then with a positive test result to do some planning for the next several years.
Mm-hmm.
The other answer, which I think is really one that we find compelling, given that we now have a basis upon which we can identify individuals at high risk, we now can come back and ask the question, if we look at potential disease-modifying drugs in these individuals who are now currently asymptomatic, can we design a study to demonstrate that one or several of those drugs might be able to delay or ideally even prevent the emergence of symptoms?
Yeah, and so you if you catch them at an early enough age, you're saying, the drugs that don't work now because it's too advanced might work at an earlier stage.
Yeah, I think the disappointing news from many very well-designed clinical studies that were intended to focus on the culprit, the amyloid protein, the A-beta protein that causes those amyloid deposits in the brain, have all failed to show efficacy. And it may well be that one interpretation of those failed clinical studies is that they tested them all in individuals who had disease. It doesn't mean that in a different setting, such as those who have preclinical or they're asymptomatic, it will work. But I think it does open up that possibility.
So if your test is basically a panel of 10 different biolipids or fats in our blood, is there any reason why doctors can't measure them now without having a test before there is one?
Well, the methodology that we used, it's certainly found in some clinical laboratories. And so although I would not advocate that this be a 10-lipid test ordered just to provide information until we've had the opportunity to extend and externally validate the results that we did in our study. At that point, I think it will be possible to now imagine a sequence where one can move this into a potential clinical diagnostic that would be available. As it is right now, since the work is the first of its kind, I think it does, as you said at the beginning, it is preliminary, but it's important, and in my estimation, it needs to be replicated.
One last question for you. How surprised were you to come up with this correlation?
Yeah, we were very delighted that we had such a robust signal. And we did not anticipate when looking at the whole range of metabolites that these 10 lipids would emerge as those which could be most predictive. I can say that we have looked at many other molecules in our cohort and hope shortly to be presenting additional data that suggests two things. One, that the genes that are expressed in the circulating cells of individuals who will go on to develop cognitive impairment can reliably distinguish between that group and those who will remain cognitively normal at a very, very high sensitivity and specificity. But most interestingly, the genes encode certain enzymes, and some of those enzymes are giving us additional information about what might be going on in the biology of these at-risk individuals. And linking those new findings with these lipids, I think, will provide a more fuller understanding to come back to your earlier question, which is, well, how do you connect this is yeah. our current understanding yeah. of Alzheimer's disease.
Well, Dr. Fedoroff, we'll have to have you back on to talk about that.
It'll be my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Howard Fedoroff, lead author of the study. He's professor of neurology and executive vice president of health sciences at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C.